Life is made up of experiences. Experiences shape our perspectives and allow us to pass along knowledge. In this podcast, I sit down with listeners like you and find out that no matter who you are, everyone has a story to tell. I'm Ethan Smith, and this is Life Experienced. No one can deny the importance of a first impression. This may be especially true for young adults who are able to attend college. Upon arriving at a university, choosing a field of study to declare as one's major is likely to be one of the toughest decisions facing a first-year student. Often the professor in the first class you take in a subject area can determine whether or not you decide to stick with it. For students entering the chemical engineering program at Virginia Tech over the past 15 years, that professor is Preston Durrell.
I was born in 1936, and I graduated from high school in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, the only public high school in town at the time, in 1953. And then I graduated from college with my bachelor's degree in chemical engineering in 1957. And I stayed on for my master's in nuclear engineering, graduated in 1959. And I'd been working before then, but I was working with Exxon in 1960 and had an offer of a fellowship here at Virginia Tech, which was then VPI. So I came back to graduate school in 1960 to get my PhD in chemical engineering, and finally finished in 1965. I actually graduated in 66, but I finished in 65.
Since completing his PhD in 1966, Preston has been teaching college courses across several subjects at two major universities in Southwest Virginia. When I sat down with Preston, it became evident that his own educational experiences continue to motivate the way he approaches students and learning in a college environment. Over the next two episodes, we'll hear from Preston about his educational past and his motivations for becoming a teaching professor. But to do that, we must start back at the very beginning. What was your education experience like just in grade school and high school?
Well, in grade school, I went to grade school in Iowa and Illinois and Pennsylvania and Texas.
So why the moving around?
Well, my dad was drafted. He was a surgeon. He was drafted in World War II. So we moved from Iowa, where he worked in a hospital, to Pennsylvania. But I stayed with my grandparents in Chicago for a couple years, then moved to Pennsylvania. And then after the war, he was no longer needed at that base in Middletown, Pennsylvania. So he moved to a new practice in Cleburne, Texas.
So was he ever deployed anywhere, or did he just
no,
stay stateside?
No, he stayed in Pennsylvania the whole time. So I did get to move around.
Right. Do you recall anything that was particularly difficult about that, or?
No, the moves were not particularly difficult. I rather enjoyed that part. And I was probably a decent student for, say, the first 6 years of school. And I actually, in Chicago, my grandfather didn't send me to school 1 year, and I basically learned to read, write much better out of the racing form. I developed a gambling habit even at that early age, and I was relatively successful, actually, and I can say more about that another time. But then in Texas, starting about, well, sixth, seventh, or eighth grade, I became less interested in studying and more interested in enjoying myself. And my studies sort of went downhill. And then we moved to Florida in 1950. I was in 10th grade, didn't do very well in 10th grade, and I wasn't interested. And several of my teachers, I had great teachers in English and math and in languages. They sat down and talked to me and basically told me I was going in the wrong direction. And so my junior and senior years at Fort Lauderdale High School, I decided I needed to work. But it was kind of hard to recover from my, you know, previous academic record. So I actually didn't get into college until, I think it was about August 15th. And, of course, school started in September back then. And I think the only reason I got into college was because I was from Florida, and I ended up going to MIT, and they needed geographical diversification. So my being from a public school in Florida sort of saved me. An interesting situation. And by the time I got to college, I knew I was going to have to work because I don't learn very fast.
Was there anything that particularly motivated you to pursue a degree in chemical engineering at the time?
It's interesting because when I started thinking about college, which wasn't as early as maybe it should have been, my hope was that I could major in languages because I had a great Latin teacher in Fort Lauderdale, a tremendous Spanish teacher, and I was interested in languages. But my grandfather, who was going to pay my expenses, felt that that was not a good idea, and he suggested that I major in engineering. Well, I didn't know what engineering was, but a lot of my friends were going to University of Florida, which is a very, very good chemical engineering school. And so they talked to me about engineering, and chemical engineering seemed to be kind of interesting. The only problem was I didn't take chemistry in high school, and I did very poorly, really, in biology in 10th grade, and then my physics course that I took as a senior was not very rigorous. So I really knew very little about biology, nothing about chemistry, and not much about physics. And so on the surface, engineering didn't seem like a good idea, but my grandfather prevailed, and I decided I'd major in chemical engineering. But he said, I didn't have any good hands-on skills and hadn't been a spectacular student, he figured I needed the help of a college education. And so he was willing to fund that. And since he was funding it, I did what he suggested and said I'd major in chemical engineering.
Upon arriving at MIT in 1953 to begin his degree, Preston was faced with a whole new set of challenges. Catching up on chemistry and physics at a university known for its expertise in those fields could have been very intimidating.
At first, I thought it was going to be a disaster my freshman year because I was challenged by physics. I hadn't had chemistry. And it's an interesting thing about MIT. You think of it as a school where you're kind of left out to do whatever you can do for yourself. And it might be different today, but I just can't say too much about the help that I got from the faculty, from other students, from graduate students. It was an incredible experience. The advising was just outstanding from beginning to end. I got to know faculty members, graduate students. It just turned my whole life around having that kind of an experience. And I knew that I wasn't even close to being one of the best students there. I never could have been that. So it was a great experience. I remember in general chemistry lab, having not had chemistry, I learned the class material okay, but in lab I was a disaster. So the lady who brought the reagents to lab every day for us, the concentrated sulfuric and stuff like that, her name was Agnes, and the students referred to her as Acid Agnes. Agnes would stay with me after lab each time, after the three-hour lab, and she'd show me how I should have done the experiment. And that was my first real experience in experimental science. In fact, I met one of the organic professors who was actually the master of the graduate house at MIT. And I got to know him, and he knew I kind of needed help. And so I'd go over to the graduate house and have lunch with him every Sunday. He liked to have students around, so there were students all over the place. And that was a tremendous help to me. Organic chemistry turned out then to be my favorite subject, and sometimes I wonder why I didn't major in chemistry. I'm, you know, kind of glad I majored in chemical engineering, but organic was always my favorite course.
Preston recalled multiple scenarios where he sought out help from his instructors, but there was one incident he said that he would definitely never forget.
I remember in physics at MIT, my first test, I still remember this, I made a 68. I couldn't do a force balance to save my life, but I made a 68. And I figured, well, I'll make 100 on the next test, that'll give me an 84. So I got the next test back, and I'd stood outside the test room after that second test, and I heard people discussing it, and they got answers different from mine. I was sure I'd done well, and I figured, gee, they really don't know what they're doing. And so when I got my paper back, there was a 27 on it. So I asked my buddy sitting next to me, I said, what did he do, grade this out of 30? And then I saw he'd made an 86 or something like that, so I figured I had a 27. So here I had two tests. I hadn't totaled 100 on two tests. So it looked pretty dismal at that time. And of course, midterm grades went back to my grandfather. Back then, there was no right to privacy. He was paying the bill. So I heard that there was this guy named Alexander Dingy, a former physics professor at MIT. And he ran this operation called the Associated Tutors. So I started going to the Associated Tutors. It cost $1 an hour for outside tutoring. If you had individual tutoring with Dr. Dingy, it was $2 an hour. And it was remarkable. I learned how to approach problems during that time. Ended up making a B in first semester physics. I can't recall I ever made a grade that I was happier with than that B. But, you know, fortunately, I just happened to hear about this and took advantage of it and made it through.
Upon leaving MIT, Preston still had not found his love for teaching, yet. I asked him to describe the years right after graduation, as well as what led him toward a career in academics.
So you finished up, and I guess you decided to get a job or look for jobs. So
yeah.
What was that process like, and where did you end up going?
Well, I co-opted with Dow, and I actually did two co-ops with Exxon. Then it was Esso, Standard Oil, New Jersey. And then I did what they call practice school, which is effectively a co-op with Union Carbide Nuclear Company at Oak Ridge. So I had four semesters of, you know, practical experience. And then I went to work, quote, permanently with Exxon in Baton Rouge. I really liked it there. I'd worked with them, you know, for a while as co-op. And so I took a permanent job with them. But then in 1960, one of my section heads came to me, and he'd been a faculty member here in the CHE department at Virginia Tech at VPI. And he told me that they had a scholarship fellowship opportunity. I think it was Department of Defense, I can't remember, that would take care of me for 3 years. And he said, you know, with a master's degree already, although it was in nuclear, you ought to be able to finish in 3 years. Well, fact is, I'm not a good researcher. I learned that very, very quickly. And I learned probably I wouldn't have been that happy, even if I were good in research. Maybe I would have been happy if I knew what was going on, but I probably didn't. At any rate, I came here thinking it would take me 3 years to finish. And as it turns out, it took me about 5 years to finish. That often happens. So towards the end of my time here, I was kind of desperate for money. And I got to do some paid TA work, like in unit operations lab. I actually taught a polymer course for my graduate advisor because he wasn't able to do it, and he'd already contracted with some engineers from Western Electric. So I did that. And remarkably, I found out I was interested in teaching. I'd never thought about that possibility before. So when I finished in 65, my plan was to go back with Exxon at Baton Rouge because I was on educational leave. They're really nice to me. But a friend of mine who was also a chemical engineer was teaching over what was then Radford College, formerly the women's division of EPI. And I wasn't married at that time, but I was kind of interested. And so I figured, well, here's a chance to teach chemistry, although I don't have a degree in chemistry, at a school where they didn't have then strong research expectations. So I figured I'll go over there and I'll teach for a year. If I like it, maybe I'll teach for 2 years. But my plan was to go back to Baton Rouge. I never planned to stay there, never planned to teach as a career, but it did work out that way. And I retired from Radford in 2003. And while I was there for about 12 years, I was doing administrative work as opposed to teaching, although I always taught at least one class.
Despite his retirement from teaching at Radford in 2003, Preston's story continues at Virginia Tech. We'll pick up there in next week's episode, where I'll ask Preston about coming out of retirement to continue teaching and also about various other topics of interest, including his own experiences as a graduate student, the changing technology he's seen in the academic world over the last 50 years, and, oh yes, that childhood gambling habit he mentioned. Be sure to subscribe so you won't miss next week's episode. Life Experienced is hosted and produced by Ethan D. Smith and is primarily distributed via DSound, a decentralized audio sharing platform built on the Steam blockchain. For more information, visit dsound.audio. The music in this podcast is composed by Lee Rosevere and used under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. For more information, visit freemusicarchive.org. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you like the podcast, be sure to share it with others. If you have an interesting experience that you want to share, please let me know by tweeting at Ethan D. Smith or visiting ethandsmith.com. And for those of you still listening, one other great thing happened that first year Preston taught chemistry courses at Radford. I'll let him tell you about it.
Well, it turns out the first class I taught, it was an 11 o'clock Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday class. Yeah, they had Saturday classes then. 11 o'clock Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, the worst of all times. Turns out it was, of course, all women. And one of the students in my 11 Tuesday, Thursday class, now my wife, you know, things were working out pretty good. So we sort of got along pretty well. And the biggest problem I had was all during that first year, I felt like I could be fired any day because Radford had very strict social rules. And one rule was faculty could not date students. And I didn't. We did obviously see each other in class and sometimes outside of class, but always in an academic environment. And so I managed to make it through the first year. And then we got married in the fall of her second year when she was a sophomore. After that, you know, everything was fine. But then we started having children. We had three children relatively quickly. And at that point, of course, I needed money, and she wasn't able to work yet. But as it turned out, salaries were going up fairly well, fast at that point. And I got summer employment. So that got us through. And then Lorraine started doing part-time teaching. And since then, our finances have been okay.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And once again, I'm Ethan Smith, reminding you to get out there and experience life.